Hello and welcome to another NBC Pro Basketball Talk podcast. I'm Kurt Heelan and we are here today to talk, well, we were going to talk about where is Luke Ridnour, but we fear that that's going to change like five more times during the length of this podcast. So we're going to switch and just talk about the upcoming free agents around the NBA. We're going to start. Brett Polakoff is here with me from Pro Basketball Talk. How you doing, Brett?
What is going on?
And Dominic Ridgard from NBC Sports is with us as well.
Hey, Kurt. Hey, Brett. How you guys doing?
All right.
So good.
If we're talking about the top free agents in the NBA, I feel obligated to start the conversation with the best player on the planet, who is technically a free agent in LeBron James, but he's not going anywhere. Like, there is zero chance he leaves Cleveland. So I feel obligated to mention him. But, Brett, where do you put the odds of him leaving Cleveland at?
Zero. Absolutely zero. There's no way he goes anywhere. He's going to sign a two-year deal. I think that's what we all expect, with a player option in that second year to both make as much money as possible to take advantage of the salary cap spike, but also to put pressure on the Cavaliers organization to remain relevant and to keep adding, you know, star power in free agency whenever they can so they can keep contending for a title.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, everybody, when LeBron opted out, it was like, oh, he's exercising this huge power play. And it's like, well, he really can't. He set himself up to the point where he really can't leave. You know, he would catch so much flack for leaving again that he's kind of put himself in a position where they know he's going to be there, but he's still got, you know, a lot of power in the organization. It's a really unique place he put himself in. You know, it's very interesting.
Yeah, I think the power play comes a little bit from the, I'm not going to re-sign instantly, at least until you take care of my boy Tristan Thompson, who coincidentally has the same agent, who is my longtime friend. So there's a little bit of that going on, but we all know he's not going anywhere. So let's move on to an actual interesting free agent. LaMarcus Aldridge is the next big name at the top of the board that's actually going to go somewhere. It is a very fluid moving piece. He's going to meet with about five teams starting at midnight as Tuesday turns into Wednesday and the calendar becomes July 1st. Brett, who do you think, I mean, where do you see this playing out, and who do you think is the team in the driver's seat, or is there one?
Well, right now, LaMarcus Aldridge is planning to meet with seven teams in free agency. So it's the Lakers, the Rockets, the Knicks, the Spurs, the Mavericks, the Suns, and the Raptors. So that's, you know, that's quite a long list of teams, and they all have different things to offer. The interesting thing to me is that we're seeing the Suns and the Raptors sort of included on that list. I mean, those aren't places where, you know, the big name free agents have traditionally been willing to sign. You know, I think it comes down to what he is looking for. If he wants to be, you know, a star and he wants to be the man, I don't think San Antonio is that place for him, because that's a system-based team. We've seen how, you know, Tim Duncan can be the man one night, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, Danny Green even at some point, you know, during those finals runs. So it's really more about equal opportunity. It's about shelving your ego to play in San Antonio. There were rumblings that Aldridge wasn't happy in Portland, that he wasn't getting his due, that Damian Lillard sort of took the mantle from him as being the face of that franchise. If he wants to be the man and he wants star power, I think the Lakers offer him that best opportunity. The question becomes, does he like the pieces that L.A. can put around him to possibly compete for a playoff spot, you know, as soon as next season? That becomes the question, is the remainder of the roster. But look, he's going to get max money wherever he wants to go. I would say that the Spurs and the Lakers are probably the top two teams on this list, depending on, you know, what he's looking for.
Yeah, you know, it's LaMarcus Aldridge, I feel like he's at the top of this list, partly because he seems like he's the most gettable. Like, he's the most attainable of the big-name guys. A lot of the big-name guys out there, it's like, yeah, well, he's going to meet with this, and that team, but the team he's already with is most likely to sign him. Like, you see that with guys like DeAndre Jordan, Kevin Love, and we'll get into a bunch of those guys, but he is the big-name star who has kind of flat-out said, I'm ready to leave, I'm ready to go to a new team, like, tell me why I should go to X. And like Brett was saying, and Kurt, you could probably dive into this a little more since you're on that side of the country, but it sounds like L.A. is really kind of leading the charge. It sounds like they're the front runners, and you could definitely be a star in that town, obviously. Kobe Bryant is – I feel like the more – I guess the more the kind of wheels turn on that franchise, the more it seems like he's willing to at least bring other people in and share the spotlight, some, not all, obviously. And we mentioned it in the draft, you know, all these great big men that have gone in and out of L.A., and we thought it was going to be Jahlil Okafor. Now it might be kind of through free agency instead of the draft.
Well, that's kind of how they've gotten them in the past anyway. I mean, Wilt Chamberlain, Shaq, Kareem were all traded for. I mean, those weren't guys that they, you know, had in-house. So I think the other interesting thing when you're talking about LaMarcus, not whether he goes to L.A. or San Antonio, he's going to sign, like Brett was talking about with LeBron, he's going to sign a 4 or 5 year deal, but with an opt out after 2. And he's going to take it. And Zach Lowe did a great job breaking this down today at Grantland. If LaMarcus Aldridge signs a max, opts out in 2 years, and re-signs a max, he can make more in 4 years, $111 million probably, than the Portland Trailblazers can offer right now over 5, which would be about $108. I mean, he can make more money in less time because of how the salary cap is going to spike. And that's why you're going to see everybody do this. Everybody's going to opt out within the next couple of years to get a piece of that money. So he's not necessarily fully wed to where he goes. If he chooses, let's say he goes way off the board and chooses somewhere like Toronto, which is unlikely, but it's also kind of interesting because, I mean, they've got Kyle Lowry, they've got, you know, DeMar DeRozan and Terrence Ross. They need a 4. They're in the East. There's some things you can try to sell there. If he were to do that, he'd be committed for 2 years, and then he can put himself back on the market and go where, you know, whether it's the Lakers or somewhere else. So I agree with Brett. I think the Lakers are and the Spurs are the front runners. It's what he wants. Does he want to be the man and be willing to suffer through a couple seasons while guys like Russell and Randall get up to speed, or does he want to win? Is that or did you and how much does he want to go back to Texas? Does he want to go back to San Antonio, win right now? The thing I would watch there, by the way, the sign that they've landed somebody is that they make a deal to move Splitter or DL. If they make a move to move Splitter or DL for pennies on the dollar, then they've got somebody.
Yeah, they're opening up the space, clearly.
Yeah, well, it becomes really interesting at that point.
Situation about how, you know, he'll sign a 2-year deal, maybe opt out, option for year 3, and that a lot of players around the league are looking to do that. I'm not so sure how many of the, you know, sort of all-star guys are going to do that. I mean, every year the salary cap increases at least a little bit and players are eligible for raises. The reason that we see guys sign 4-year, 5-year deals is injury insurance, right? I mean, that's guaranteed money no matter what happens. So if you sign a 2-year deal, something happens, you know, you get a horrific injury, and all of a sudden, you know, that money that could have been in the bank for years to come is gone. So I know the salary cap is going to spike, and I know that's sort of the popular opinion right now, is that all these players are going to take opt-outs, you know, after 2 years. But I don't know, man. It seems a little bit risky not to lock in that max money right now in the prime of your career if it's available.
Yeah, you know, Brett, I completely agree with you. And it's funny. It's like everybody's, like you said, is banking on that. But another thing you can't forget is, you know, the league changes so drastically and so quickly. Guys can just – you can lose value in the course of a couple seasons. Like it happens to a lot of guys. It happened to a guy like Rondo. You know, the Celtics wanted to move him. They had this huge asking price for him. They kind of refused to bend on some of their requests when they were trying to trade him. Then he gets hurt, so they have to they just flip him for I think it was 2 first rounders. And then now look at him with the Mavs. He had a horrible season. He lost so much money because of that. You know, I agree that, you know, a lot of these guys are trying to look more long-term. It looks like kind of the savvy business move, but they have to be ready for the backfire because it could happen, and it will inevitably happen to somebody. We don't know who yet, but there will be a case study on the player that banked on himself with the cap spiking and they lost. Like, it will happen.
Yeah, and the other wild card in there is that come 2017 to the summer, there's a lockout, and how big a lockout is it? I mean, does it cost games into the regular season? Does it cost a season? What is the NBA in its financial situation? I mean, in terms of players and what is a max salary and all that stuff? What is that on the back end of that after 2017? Nobody knows. I mean, it's you're betting on a something you may not be able to control in 2 years that could be good for you and could be bad. So there's just a ton of variables involved in these kind of decisions.
You know, we talked about Rondo. Let's talk about him. Where does he end up this summer? You know, he cost himself a bunch of money by, you know, being a cancer in the Mavericks locker room and honestly just not playing that well, you know, once he got to Dallas in the second half of the season. So, I mean, you know, Boston certainly didn't get what they could have gotten for Rondo a couple of years ago. But now he's an unrestricted free agent. I mean, where does he end up and for how much money? I think you look around, you know, I could see him ending up with a team like the Knicks if they believe, you know, that he can be a reclamation project and he doesn't force them to, you know, lock him up for 2, 3, 4 seasons on some sort of ridiculous contract. If he's willing to play on a reasonable deal, maybe a 2-year deal for who knows what, you know, $7-8 million, something reasonable, you know, I think, you know, we could see him in an interesting situation.
Yeah, I'm hard pressed to see him getting 8 figures anywhere. I can't imagine. I mean, there was all this talk about the Lakers. They were the team that was at the front of that talk, and that's dead now. I mean, between Clarkson and then you know, drafting D'Angelo Russell, their point guard is kind of set for the future. They are just going to ride that out. They're not going to bring in somebody like Rondo, again, unless they can get him on a really cheap deal. But I think that's the thing. If I'm offering Rondo a contract as a GM, as a reclamation project, like you said, as somebody I believe in, I'm not giving him more than 2 years. I just saw what he did to Dallas. I don't want to be locked into him. I want the ability to shed that should it come to that pretty quickly.
Yeah, and the rumors of him going to the Kings, it's like the dysfunction wasn't at its peak. Like, it could get disastrous with someone like him and Boogie in the same locker room. So, you know, he's running out of suitors fast, especially because, you know, the NBA has become such a point guard driven league. It seems like everywhere you look, there's at least a solid player at that spot or somebody that they're hoping to cultivate at that spot. There's very few teams that are out there who are looking to spend a lot of money that don't already have a point guard.
And if you watched how they were defended in the playoffs, you can see why nobody wants a point guard who can't shoot. Now, if you can lay off that guy, it changes the dynamic of how you can defend a team. And you can still lay off Rondo. His jumper's improved, but it's not striking the fear of God into anybody. Speaking of fear of God, let's move on to a couple other big men. Marc Gasol, do we need to talk about him much? He is in Spain.
No.
He is meeting only with Memphis. He is not going anywhere. I'm not even sure we really need to discuss him unless you guys have some sort of strong opinion about Marc Gasol.
No, he's definitely staying with the Grizzlies.
We'll move on to the actual interesting big man who could be on the move in DeAndre Jordan. He's meeting – the Clippers are still in the mix. Is the team he's been with, the team that helped under Doc Rivers actually make him the kind of star who's going to earn this kind of money. But there's a lot of teams lined up for him now. The Lakers are there. Pretty much the entire state of Texas is lined up for him. If you're DeAndre Jordan, what's your priority? Is it winning? Is it money? Is it being a bigger part of the offense? What do you think he's actually looking for, Brett?
I think he's looking for some recognition. You know, playing on that team, you know, Chris Paul is the man in Los Angeles with the Clippers. You know, he's widely recognized as the best point guard in the game. You know, Blake Griffin, also a superstar, you know, popular with the fans, good personality, you know, won that dunk contest, you know, in Los Angeles back in 2011. You know, those are the Clippers. You know, the Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, that's the face of the L.A. franchise. Doc Rivers did a great job, you know, getting DeAndre Jordan involved, you know, tried to include him as part of the quote-unquote big three in Los Angeles. He put up some good numbers, you know, offensively. You know, defensively, we talked about this at some point, but, you know, much was made of him potentially being a defensive player of the year candidate, but the on-off numbers with him, you know, don't really back that up. He is a, you know, heck of an athletic guy, you know, definitely causes problems for other teams on the defensive end of the floor in the paint. I really think if he's looking for recognition, he needs to leave. You know, he needs to go somewhere else. He's going to get a 4-year max contract to play elsewhere. That's close enough to the 5-year deal. You know, players have shown a willingness to leave that 5th year, you know, if they find a better situation. So where is that situation? Is it Dallas? You know, the Mavericks are always aggressive in free agency. It seems like they have a different roster basically every single year. That might be a nice place for him. But if he's looking to be an all-star and he's looking to be a guy who's much more widely recognized as being, you know, one of the best players in the game or one of the best defenders in the game, then I think he needs to go somewhere else. And that, to me, would be the reason that he leaves the Clippers.
Yeah, and you know, another thing is, it was very interesting once the Clippers season ended, a lot of the reports came out that, you know, the kind of the bickering between him and Chris Paul was more legit than, you know, obviously the Clippers tried to quell those rumors and say those guys get along great. I think Doc came out in the media and said those guys get along great. But, you know, a lot of times with these kind of things where there's smoke, there's fire. And I think, you know, if he leaves, I think it'll be because, like Brett said, he wants more recognition and he's ready for a change of scenery. And he's kind of, you know, at certain times he became somewhat of a whipping boy when they lost and they did all the hack of Jordan and he can't stay on the court. And I think that kind of bugged him. It's not like it's going to go anywhere. You know, teams are still going to follow him. But I think he definitely felt like he was a little underappreciated as Brett said, kind of the third star. And so I could see that in connection with, I think, you know, we've talked about how Chris Paul can really wear on his teammates and it can just get flat on annoying. If it's reached the point where he says, hey, I'd rather take a 4-year max and get away from this guy who won't stop, you know, kind of bitching at me all the time, like, I'll do it, you know. So I could definitely see him leaving. He's definitely one of those guys that, you know, you hear the quote-unquote the Clippers are the front runners or the leaders or they can offer him the most money, but I don't think that guarantees that he stays there at all.
No, I agree. And by the way, I think you guys are spot on. I went to a lot of Clippers games last night, and there is a frustration with him in terms of just not feeling appreciated and recognized, which is a little, you know, look, this is Doc Rivers doing such a good job building him up. I mean, remember where he was under Vinny Del Negro when Doc came in. Vinny Del Negro just beat him down, confidence-wise and everything else. Doc Rivers helped turn him into this star, with built up his confidence, started using him far better in the offense. But, I mean, if I'm looking at him, here's the other thing. He wants more touches. He wants to be a bigger role. He wants to be an all-star. He wants these kind of things. I don't know that he has the game to give him a lot more offensive touches. He is fantastic on the roll. He is fantastic in transition. You are not going to find somebody his size who's a better athlete. But he's not a guy with a lot of gifted post moves. He is certainly doesn't have a jump shot. There's limits to what you can do with him offensively, things that Chris Paul maximizes that a lot of other teams are going to struggle to use as well. And I'm not sure that he's – is this a case of – Brett, you see him as a guy who could be a guy who doesn't have the value once he gets on another team?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it has to do with Chris Paul, you know, and just how effective DeAndre Jordan is on that pick and roll. But look, I mean, this is a guy who led the league in rebounds per game, you know, 15 per, I believe he led the league in field goal percentage. If not, he's right there, number one or number two.
Yeah, he did.
You know, he's a guy that can score inside. If you have a point guard that can distribute, get him the ball in position to score, you know, the fouling thing is real. You know, you can't shoot that low of a percentage and be a guy who gets, you know, 30 touches a game. It's just not going to happen. It doesn't work out that way. The math just doesn't work. So I don't know how much bigger of a force he can be offensively, but he could certainly get some more recognition. And guys, you know, Kurt knows this. He's heard it around the league. I've heard it around the league. The thing between him and Chris Paul is real. You know, they did not get along at times during the regular season. Chris Paul is basically like Kobe Bryant, you know, one of the fieriest competitors in the game. And that act can wear thin on a guy that just wants to kind of go play basketball and have fun. If he's not in it, you know, life or death, the way Chris Paul is, you know, that could get real old real fast, having your point guard, you know, yell at you the entire season. That could be certainly enough, you know, to help push him out the door.
Yeah, and you know, Brett and Kurt, you guys mentioned something I didn't think about. And I think there's two factors that kind of fight against one another in terms of his role on the Clippers and what it could look like if he goes to a different team. Like you said, a lot of, you know, the with him rolling on pick and rolls and catching those lobs, a lot of it is the danger that Chris Paul creates off of the pick and rolls. You know, he could shoot it, he could drive it, and he's such a great passer. But another thing is, and we saw it this year, when Blake and DeAndre play together, it's really, you know, DeAndre's really just there to set picks and kind of and rim run and get offensive rebounds. And when Blake got hurt this season, and I forget how much time he missed, but it was a significant amount of time. That was when DeAndre Jordan was putting up the crazy kind of eye-popping statistical freak numbers. Like, he had 20-20 games. He had 18 and 16. Like, every night he was putting up that those kind of numbers with that kind of effort. So I think it's a thing where if he leaves and there's not kind of a dominant low post score or a low post isolation score like Blake Griffin was, you could see DeAndre Jordan, I think, put up even better numbers, at least statistically, on a different team. But then, like you said, there's that tug and pull of, well, then if he doesn't have a point guard the caliber of Chris Paul, how does that detract from his game as well? You know, it's a really interesting thing that you have to think about when he goes to a different team, if he goes to a different team.
I think the one really interesting thing here also that just we haven't talked about yet, if he leaves, and there's a legitimate chance he leaves, he might stay. I think he's got some soul searching to do, and then see what kind of offers are out there. And it's not even the money as much as like you guys have been saying. It's what does he want? How much does he want this recognition? How much does he want away from the Clippers? If he leaves, the Clippers are screwed. They will basically have to try to replace him with the $5.5 million mid-level exception. They are, because of what they're playing Blake and what they're paying Chris Paul and everything, they don't have the money under the cap to begin to replace his talent. They're going to get a far inferior player, and it's going to hurt them considerably. They are not going to be quite the same team next year if he walks.
They went out and got Lance Stephenson this summer, so obviously all the problems are solved.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, that will solve all your locker room chemistry issues. He's been great everywhere. God. There's going to be one time when we're all trying to get into Clipper locker room after the game, and they're going to be keeping the door shut for a while because they've got to keep Chris Paul and Lance Stephenson away from each other.
That'd be awesome.
Moving on to a guy who would like to switch teams, but is going to find it a little bit difficult. And Brett, you wrote about this today. Dwayne Wade's frustrated with the Miami Heat. He is now a free agent. He is going to test the market, and there ain't a great market for him.
No, there's really not. And, you know, the reason is his age and his history of injury. You know, he's still capable of playing at a high level. He was the third leading scorer in the Eastern Conference last season behind only Kyrie Irving and LeBron James. So Wade can still bring it, but he can't bring it for 82 games during the regular season anymore. You're looking at him. You know, if you get 60 good games out of Dwayne Wade, you know, moving forward, that's probably about all you can expect. And then just hope that he's healthy for the playoffs. You know, I think you look around the league, who might take a chance on giving Dwayne Wade some real money? I think it's teams like the Knicks and the Lakers, primarily because they need star power in those large markets to sell those high-priced seats. You have, you know, Carmelo Anthony got a max contract when that may not have been the best thing long-term for the Knicks franchise. And we saw what the Lakers gave Kobe Bryant for the final few years of his deal. They overpaid him because you need to keep star talent in those markets. So I think a case can be made for the Lakers or the Knicks offering Wade closer to what he's looking for. But I don't think either of those teams, I think they're going to be a little bit careful during the rebuilding process. And they're not going to give Wade anything like 5 years and $80 million like he might be looking for in Miami.
Yeah, and you know, the nostalgia is only in Miami, I think. You know, like, everything he's done for that franchise, it's not going to travel to a place like L.A. where they've got their championships and they've got their key guy. And I think we're starting to see at least somewhat of, you know, a smartening up process around the league where, especially at his age, with his injury history, like, you don't overpay kind of the superstar on the downslope. Especially, we can, like you said, if you get 60 games out of him, it's a win. So, there's a greater chance that he leaves than I originally thought. You know, I originally thought this was just all kind of smoke and mirrors, and they'll figure it out. But there's no way that I think Miami's easily going to offer him the most money out of any team that's going to court him, and I think he's going to learn that soon. And I see that. I think he's going to resign.
I think ultimately they end up working it out for the reasons you just mentioned, which is that, you know, they are going to offer him more than anyone else. The Knicks exist out there as a potential option, or the Lakers exist as an option, but I don't like the move for the Lakers. Do they really need a wing player on the downside of his career that's very expensive, has gone through a lot of injuries the last few years? And I mean, I think they've got one of those on the roster. Like, I'm not sure they need another one. The Knicks, again, you could use the star power. There's some teams that might be able to see him as somebody you can plug in and really lift them up a notch. Because like Brett said, when he's on the court, he's still playing at an all-star fantastic level. It's just you can't count on him consistently. But at that price, I'm just not sure anybody's going to tie up their cap space, especially, you know, if you're talking multiple years out. I don't want to tie up my cap space 2 or 3 years from now for Dwayne Wade.
No, it's a 2-year deal, I think, if a team takes a chance on him. And I don't think you can give him much more than that. And the Heat are going to offer him something longer term and closer to what he's looking for. Maybe spread his money out over 3 or 4 seasons, you know, similar to what teams tend to do with guys near the end of their careers, right? And like instead of giving Tim Duncan potentially $10 or $12 million this season, if it's going to be his last year, they'll give him a 2-year guaranteed deal for, you know, 6 and 6, you know, to spread that money out and not take the big enough cap hit. I think we're going to see something similar in Miami. I think, you know, Dom, I think you're absolutely right. I think Dwayne Wade is going to be back with the Heat. The only question is at what price.
Yeah, fair enough. Speaking of guys the Knicks might actually get, Greg Monroe. He is going to get a max deal, but Brett, are you going to give him a max deal if you're Phil Jackson?
I think so. You know, the Knicks need some, you know, basically some all-star level talent, you know, to add to that roster. Phil Jackson is not going to be patient with this rebuild. He's not going to be around for the entirety of that 5-year contract that he signed. He's 69 years old. He wants to get this team back to relevance as soon as possible. So he's not going to make dumb decisions to get there, but I don't think it's a dumb decision to lock up Greg Monroe on a 4-year max. You know, the question with him is on the offensive end of the floor. I mean, he averaged over 15 points, 10 rebounds. That's a nice boost to the New York offense, but the problem is that he takes the, you know, vast majority of his shots, you know, basically 3 feet away from the rim, and he shot under 50% from the field last season. So that's a little bit of a sort of concern. But he's good on the defensive end of the floor, and I think it's a fine idea for the Knicks to go out, you know, and get a guy like Greg Monroe.
Yeah, and it's not that – and I agree. I think they're going to pay him the max. And like we've always said, you know, it's not necessarily – Is he a max player? It's can you afford it? And do you need that kind of influx of talent? And the Knicks clearly do. And you know, I think as big a thing as bring him in is they can't afford to strike out, especially on a guy that has been rumored to go to them basically since last season. You know, he's ready to move on, and it seems like he wants to come to New York. If you're really trying to get into like the win now mode, you can't afford to strike out on a guy who's got a lot of talent and he clearly wants to go there.
Yeah, and I think we need to emphasize here, he is a good center. I mean, this is a guy who's a bubble all-star kind of center, and it'll be interesting to see his numbers because I think they'll get a lot better getting away from Andre Drummond because they both kind of just they weren't a good combo together. They clogged the lane a little bit. They tried to make that work in Detroit, but if you've got Andre Drummond, your four has to space the floor in a way that Greg Monroe simply can't. So I think in New York, where you are theoretically playing Carmelo Anthony at the four or Porzingis or whoever you're going to put at the four, it's a much better fit for what he wants to do offensively. The concern, I think, is the other end of the floor. He's okay defensively, but he's not your rim protector. You know, he'd be great next to Serge Ibaka, but there aren't a lot of Serge Ibakas. There aren't rim protectors who can also space the floor, man. Those guys are very limited supply. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Knicks build around him. But I think Brett hit the nail on the head. You know what the Knicks need? They need talent, man. They don't really get to be all that picky right now.
When you look at the Knicks, you know, roster for next season, they don't even have a lot of guys under contract. They're going to be basically fielding an entirely new team. You have guys like Alexi Shved, Quincy AC, Travis Ware all could be, you know, restricted free agents. And then, you know, we'll see what happens in terms of who the Knicks want to sign. But the only players that are guaranteed right now, you know, we know Porzingis because they just drafted him, but Carmelo Anthony, obviously, Jose Calderon, Cle'Anthony Early, and that's it. You know, so they're going to have to really build. And so, you know, again, it comes down to they just need talent of any kind. Get who you can get to commit to your team and then take it from there in building around, you know, the best players possible that you can get to agree to sign on your roster.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, they don't really have a lot of choices. They need to get the guys they can get. And some of those guys may be on short-term deals as they try to look ahead to, you know, who they can get in future years. But they also have the advantage of that, you know, the cap's about to spike. And the Knicks and Lakers always have the advantage of, if they want to get a sit-down with a top free agent, they will pretty much always get the sit-down. They at least can get their foot in the door in a way that smaller markets just do not have. It's a huge advantage. All right, well, let's talk about Miami a little bit. They've got one major... I mean, we talked about Wade, but the one other guy out there, but it looks like he's going to resign, is Goran Dragic, who they traded for, who, you know, they see as the guy who can run that kind of space and pace and keep them closer to what they like to do offense. You guys, Brett, you see him going anywhere else, or is this kind of a lock?
No, I think it's a lock, and I think Goran is a guy who is going to be looking for that big payday, you know, this summer. He's not a guy that's going to try to take a two-year deal with an opt-out in that third season. He wants a full, you know, five-year max. He likes Miami, you know, it's a solid organization there. You know, he's getting up there in years himself. This is the first chance to really secure that really big-time payday. So I think you see him, you know, get a five-year deal for as close to the max as possible.
Yeah, you know, things, sans kind of the Wade situation, things don't look too bad for Miami. They're going to re-sign Goran for, I think a close to $90 million. You know, there were reports that they were going to maybe lowball him, maybe in the low 80s, you know, that if that's lowballing, low $80 million. But, you know, it looks like they're gonna get him. They got Deng to opt in for, I think, $10 million, which is probably around where he should get paid, but you never know what he could have earned if he opted out. So if they can figure out how to get Wade under contract, I think Miami's looking pretty good.
Yeah, it's an interesting roster. I mean, with Bosch, you got to remember they get Chris Bosch back. They've got Hassan Whiteside. Justice Winslow fell into their lap, and suddenly, you know, in the East, that we'll see how it could do in the playoffs, but I think that team could win a lot of regular season games.
Yeah, I liked Miami last season before the injury sort of, you know, got the best of them. You know, I thought that, you know, Wade and Bosch in increased roles, you know, were going to be a big plus for that team, and I really like the once they, you know, traded for Dragic at the deadline. I really like that deal as well. So, you know, it always comes down to health with these guys. I mean, nobody expected Chris Bosch to be done for the season with the lung issue that he had. And, you know, I think, as we said earlier, we don't expect Wade to play more than 60 or so games. But if they can keep it together, you know, those times that he is on the floor, I think they have a legit shot at making it back to the playoffs.
So now we'll move on to, I think, one of the more interesting free agents on the board, because people kind of know his name from the finals a couple years ago. But a guy who, in the right situation, is, look, he is not option one or even, frankly, option two in your offense. But if he's on your team as your star 3-and-D guy, he can really make a difference. And that's Danny Green. Brett, how much are you paying him, and what kind of teams are going to go after him?
I think there's a really strong market for Danny Green. You know, he's a critical piece. I mean, he's the type of guy that you need on your team if you want to win a championship, frankly. I mean, he's, as you said, he's that 3-and-D guy. I think he could get, you know, up to $12 million a year somewhere to play. So the question becomes, are there any contenders that want to try to fit him in, add him to the roster, or, you know, does he just, you know, take a payday to go play, you know, somewhere else, you know, with basically anyone? I don't think the Spurs are going to be able to afford to keep him. So it's going to be very interesting to see where he ends up. I'd like to see a contender go out and grab him, but it wouldn't surprise me if he just took a huge payday to play for, you know, some team that isn't even going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, he's the kind of guy who provides value on any team he's on, and you can his skill set is so translatable to kind of any system you run, because you need floor spacers, like you said, and he's great on the defensive end. I think can't remember who did the piece, but he's one of like the top three transition defenders at his position in the entire league. So I think his asking price would start at $10 million, and I could easily see it getting up to 13 a year. And I think he's going to take the longest contract that he's offered with the most money, because, you know, we got to remember before, like, his heroics in the finals and him setting three-point records, he was a guy who was out of the league at one point. He was a D-League guy, cut from the – like, couldn't sniff the court when he played for some of those bad Cavaliers teams. Like, he's looking for his payday, and I think his value is going to be at its highest.
Yeah, I agree. You know, like you said, there's some interesting fits with him, just teams that have some cap space and want to burn it this year. I don't know that you put him in Utah, but the Milwaukee, some of those type of teams who are up-and-coming teams, and suddenly he's the kind of guy you can insert and get some value for. And those are teams that may need to burn some of that cap space this year. It's if you're one of those mid-market teams with cap space and you know that next year everybody's going to have cap space, you might be willing to overpay somebody a little bit to land them now, just because you're going to have the financial leverage this summer that you're not going to have next summer. So you could see, yeah, I think those are the kind of teams you're going to, when we see some contracts this free agency where we're like, they just paid who, how much? Chris Middleton just made what? The Bucks need to burn some of that cash is what's going on. And they know that they're not really going to necessarily have that free agency advantage next year. One other guy that's really an interesting move and is being linked now to Atlanta. Do you see, Brett, Monta Ellis working with the Hawks?
The interesting thing about the Hawks is that I think you have to wonder if what we saw the first half of the season was fool's gold, or if they really had something there that could work long-term and that is sustainable. They won 40 of their first 48 games, but then kind of cruised, you know, the second half of the season. They ended up winning 60 games, but, you know, not even close to as high of a percentage. And then we saw them stumble to the finish line. I mean, they lost two games in the first round of the playoffs to a brutal Nets team. I mean, I don't even know how that – I was at those games. I don't even know how that happened. You know, and then they had the injuries catch up with them towards the end of the season. Look, they have Damari Carroll and Paul Millsap who are unrestricted free agents. I don't know that they're going to come up with what it's going to take to re-sign both of those guys. If you don't, you need shot creation on the offensive end of the floor, and Ellis is the guy that can provide that, but you're right. He seems to be a player – it would go against, you know, the Hawks system that we saw them run so successfully for the bulk of last season. I don't know that he fits, but at the same time, Atlanta needs offense, and Ellis is the guy that can provide it.
Yeah, and, you know, another thing is they have kind of a free agency situation they have to worry about themselves, and I think they're kind of planting seeds out there if some of the guys that they're hoping they re-sign, you know, it doesn't happen. Specifically, I think they're going to go hard after Paul Millsap, who's a free agent, who I'm sure we'll get into. But also a guy like Damari Carroll, another 3-and-D guy who they might get priced out of signing him. I think he did a good job of driving up his value during the playoffs. You know, if he leaves and they kind of need to shuffle things around, maybe go more offensive-oriented, a little faster up and down the court with a guy like Monta Ellis who can really run out and score. You know, I think it's just trying to kind of set the seeds to get more options out there because they have a lot of decisions to make.
Yeah, I keep hearing that they're going hard at Millsap, that they're not – look, and with reason. He is so central to what they do in terms of a guy who can rebound and a guy who can knock down threes and does a lot of things that their style of play they can't do without him. So they're not going to let him go. They're going to go pretty hard at him and pretty much beat or match anything. So the sense is that he's staying put. Damari Carroll, I think, is, like we were talking about, I think is a very different case. Like you said, this was a guy who, you know, everybody wants to find the next Damari Carroll. Like, where can we find a guy for $1 million who can play at a, you know, this fantastic level? He's played himself into a nice deal. And I think, look, talk about a guy who's going to have some options. There's going to be a lot of teams looking at him.
Yeah, Damari Carroll is absolutely a guy that could be the recipient of one of those overpriced contracts this summer, right? I mean, once that salary cap spikes, you know, deals signed this summer are going to look like bargains. Even if you see Damari Carroll get ridiculously paid, you know, something like, I don't know, $15 million a year for what he does. I mean, he was by far the Hawks' best player throughout the playoffs. I mean, wasn't Millsap, it wasn't Korver, it wasn't Horford, it was Damari Carroll on both ends of the floor. He's the reason that they got as far as they did in the postseason. So he's definitely a guy I'd say is a strong candidate to be, you know, overpaid on a contract that has us maybe scratching our heads this summer or saying, wow, that's a lot of money for him. But then in 2 years, once the cap, you know, spikes the way it's going to, it doesn't look so bad.
Yeah, he is really genuinely could land in, like you said, I think he's a guy that's, he's not going to be in that first tier. You're not going to hear about the too much in the first 4 days of free agency, but as that first wave starts to settle a little bit and we get into that second wave, he's a team a lot of guys, a lot of teams would really like to jump on. Speaking of 3-and-D guys worth taking a look at, would you, he's coming off an Achilles injury and Portland wants to keep him, but if you're looking at your free agent options, are you considering making a run at Wes Matthews?
Yeah, I really like Wes Matthews as a player. You know, you mentioned 3-and-D, his 3-point shooting. You know, when he was healthy at the beginning of last season, you know, the Blazers were the ones, you know, leading the team in 3-point shooting. It wasn't the Warriors. You know, Wes Matthews and Damian Lillard, that combination was out shooting Steph Curry and Klay Thompson for a little bit, you know, towards the beginning of the season. So Wes Matthews, real solid player, good defender, good locker room guy by all accounts, and a, you know, lights out shooter. So he's coming off of the Achilles, obviously, but I think he's another guy, you know, that could get paid. You know, Curry, you and I, you know, follow the Lakers. He's a guy I'd love to see, you know, end up in Los Angeles.
Yeah, you know, I completely agree with you, Brett. I really like Wes Matthews' game. And to piggyback off your point, I'm pretty sure when he got hurt, he was actually leading the league in three-pointers made. You know, it wasn't a guy like Steph or Klay like you would guess. It was him.
Right.
And I think he's a perfect candidate for the shorter-term deals that we were talking about. You know, teams want to prove – or teams want him to prove that he didn't lose too much from that injury. And I think he's willing to prove that, you know, I could drive my price up even higher, especially when the salary cap spikes. You know, paying him three years at like 14, 15 mil a year, like I think I would sign up for that, especially considering how much value he provides right away. And like you said, I think he'd fit perfectly with a team like the Lakers.
Yeah, he provides value right away and provides locker room leadership right away. He certainly has that in Portland. And boy, it sure does look, when you look at the moves Portland makes, that they're envisioning the post LaMarcus Aldridge world, aren't they? I mean, that's a team thinking, hey, we gotta restructure this thing around Lillard and what moves are we gonna make?
Yeah, and you look at, you know, the way that roster was last season. I mean, they kind of, you know, maxed out their potential. The Western Conference is brutal, it's tough, but you know, guys that were key contributors on that team, LaMarcus Aldridge, Wes Matthews, Robin Lopez. You know, don't laugh with Robin Lopez. I mean, that guy has emerged into one of the better defensive centers in the game. All those guys are now, you know, unrestricted free agents. So, you know, you look at the Blazers situation, Damian Lillard and a bunch of question marks. You know, Mason Plumlee they got from the Nets. Guys like C.J. McCollum, they got Noah Vonleh now. I mean, that's not a great, impressive roster. So the Blazers, if they don't make the moves and they end up losing all these guys in free agency, they could be in for a very long season, you know, next year.
Yeah, and you know, just to piggyback off that, one of the staples on their wings, along with, you almost looked at him and Wes Matthews as running mates a little bit, was Nicholas Batum, and now he's traded away, like you said. So just the question marks are everywhere. So I'm really interested to see like how they kind of, like you said, want to formulate their team in the post LaMarcus Aldridge kind of era.
Yeah, I think this year they're going to be entertaining because it's going to be the Damian Lillard show and he's just going to go ballistic, but they're not going to be very good. And if you're looking for a team in the West that likely to slip out of the playoffs so that Oklahoma City or whoever you want can slip in, that's the team most likely poised for that kind of fall. They're going to go all the way from the 4 seed, which should have been the 6 seed, but the 4 seed all the way down and out. We didn't talk about a handful of other guys on this podcast too much because I don't know that there's much to say about guys like Brook Lopez or Kevin Love or Jimmy Butler. I mean, Jimmy Butler is, I think, only interesting in this sense. He is going to sign. I think he's going to get somebody, the Lakers, or convince the Bulls to do this, or somebody to give him a 3-year deal instead of signing the full 5 that's out there, because I think he wants to. He's young enough. He wants to tap into that money, but he wants some security. But aside that, I don't. Is there any drama with any of those guys?
I think Kevin Love is an interesting situation only because, look, he wants to be back in Cleveland. I think that much is clear. But it's interesting because what kind of contract does he get from the Cavaliers? What would make the most sense for him to do a LeBron deal? Just a, you know, 1-year guaranteed opt-out after, you know, for that second year. But what if he decides he wants, the long-term security now, and he wants that 5-year max. Then I think it becomes a little bit interesting for the Cavaliers because they're going to have to max out Tristan Thompson. We already talked about, you know, he's a restricted free agent, shares an agent with LeBron James. What happens if Kevin Love also wants a 5-year max? Do the Cavaliers do it? I think they do because that's a tradable deal in the future, but I still think it gives them at least a little bit of pause.
Yeah, you know, I think the reports coming out now is that he does want a 5-year max. He wants the 5-year, I think, $110 million. And like you said, I think they do it because they kind of have to. He provides so much value on the court as a stretch four. You know, at first I didn't think it was possible, but now it wouldn't shock me if they re-sign him and LeBron's okay with kind of letting his buddy Tristan Thompson kind of chase money elsewhere, especially if they're too cap-strung to re-sign both of them. So his situation is interesting because at first I thought he was going to look for a shorter-term deal to opt out, but now it seems like he's kind of firm in his stance that he would take a 5-year, $110 million max deal.
You know, if you're the Cavs, though, I'm going to give him that. I'm going to re-sign Tristan Thompson. But as we've been saying all day, once the cap spikes, that Kevin Love contract, A, isn't that bad if you decide you need to keep him on your books because you're rolling now with him and Kyrie and LeBron. Or if you decide you've got to move him, that becomes a far more movable deal. It becomes something that other teams are going to be interested in. It's going to have value in other locations. So I'm going to offer it. I'm going to walk into the room with Kevin Love and put that on the table and hope he takes it, because whatever happens with him, I think it's going to work pretty well for the Cavs.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, I think everybody was saying, you know, they have – could Kevin Love walk away? And they said, well, he must have had some wink-wink deal to stay with the Cavs, and how would it look if he left? Well, then it's like, well, then how would it look if the Cavs sign up to a 5-year deal and then ship him away? Like we've always kind of said, the loyalty is kind of one-sided in that regard.
I think they have to sign him to whatever contract he wants, at least for this upcoming season, because they traded Andrew Wiggins to get him, and they don't have a championship yet. So the only way that Andrew Wiggins trade ends up being okay in Cleveland is if they win a championship with LeBron James and his current crop. It doesn't have to be with Kevin Love, but they have to win a championship with LeBron here. Otherwise, that Wiggins trade is a disaster. And so I think you have to give Love whatever contract he wants, bring him back at least for next season. If everybody's healthy, they still don't make the finals, or they, you know, don't end up winning a title, and you feel like you need to go in another direction, then you can consider trading him. But I think at least in the short term, they have no choice but to bring him back.
Yeah, that Love trade for Wiggins is one of those that's going to be, like, at the time, I think we were all like, hey, it's a win-now team. This is a smart move. And 10 years from now, everybody's going to look back like, why did they do that? I got a feeling that if Wiggins really develops into what we think he's going to develop into, it's going to be one that in hindsight, everybody is going to forget at the time it was a pretty smart move.
They had to do it at the time. If you have LeBron James in his prime and you have the opportunity to trade for another all-star to put next to him, you do it, and you trade away a rookie and you hope for the best. They had no choice at the time, but you're right. You know, once we get a few years down the road, especially if Cleveland doesn't win a title, it's not going to look so good.
All right, well, we've covered a lot. We will be back during the course of free agency with some more PBT podcasts to talk about once guys start meeting, once guys start signing and inking their deals. And by then, we will have had 7 new homes for Luke Ridenour. Now, and we'll
for
find
sure
out where he lands. And we'll just do a whole podcast about the travels of Luke Ridenour at some point. So everybody, thanks for listening. Brett, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
I am at BrettEP.
And Dom, you're on Twitter at?
At DL Ritty.
Cool. And you can find me at Basketball Talk. Be sure to check out Pro Basketball Talk a lot over the next few days. We will have all the latest news, notes, and rumors. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you all again soon.